We've begun a series which we're calling Words to Live By, in which we're going to be looking at various words in our New Testament that have special meaning to us as Christians. And it's those special meanings that can make all the difference in our life. Because when we understand these words, then we understand better what God has in mind for us. And it shapes not only our relationship with God, but it shapes our relationship with each other and with the world around us. It even shapes how we look at ourselves. And the first word we want to do on this Father's Day is the word Father. This is a very special word in the Bible. Father. Certainly we have it in our language, but we want to look at it as it was used 2,000 and more years ago. Our New Testament was originally written in the Greek language. And so in Greek, the word for father was pater, or potter. Pater still exists in some forms in our language today, knowing that some of the words in our English language moved over from the ancient Greek. And so we have in our language today words like paternal and paternity and even patriarch, all of which derive from that Greek word pater. And as I see Jim here, and I know that he speaks Spanish, and we, in the Spanish language, father is padre. Again, that is from the Greek word into the Spanish, padre, father. And of course, its most fundamental meaning is that of one who is the biological father. In some context, the sire of another. Father. But the word was used in other ways in biblical times, besides just the biological term, father. For example, among the ancient Jewish peoples and other cultures as well, we see it in the Old Testament. There was this period of time at the beginning of the Old Testament that was often referred to as the patriarchal time, because families and living groups were guided and overseen by a father. And so we have Abraham, who not only had two sons of his own, Isaac and Ishmael, but also had a much larger number of servants and slaves and workers who were a part of his household. And so he was the father of that whole group. Not biologically, but still he reigned as the father over that family unit. And that continued for a great period of time all through the Scriptures, even into New Testament times, where in a Jewish family, the father was not just the father of those that had been conceived by their mother at his hand, but those who were in his household as well, servants and slaves and workers, and sometimes even other extended members of the biological family. And he was the father, in a sense, of all of them. That was true not only among the Jewish people, but also among the Greeks and the Romans as well. And so this was a well-understood idea whenever our writers are writing in our New Testament, this concept of a father being more than just a biological father. He was one who was the head of a household. And in some sense, even those who were not biologically related, but were connected to the house, would refer to him as the father of the house. But the Jewish people also saw their kings as a kind of father figure. We find some references to that in the Old Testament, where the king was sort of the father of the nation, not because they owed him their existence, but rather because they looked to him to provide in the same way a father would. He looked after the well-being of the nation. He gave guidance and direction and correction to the nation. And so he was the father, in a sense, of that. That reference is made of Solomon as being the father of Israel and other kings as well. The Jewish people looked back at their ancestors and referred to them as their fathers. When they came out of Egypt during the time of the Exodus, in the book of Exodus, under Moses, later in the Scriptures, both Old Testament and New, they look back to that time and they think about those early ancestors of theirs as their fathers. And more especially one who goes even back further than that, to Abraham. They referred to him as Father Abraham, even though their direct biological connection was pretty tenuous by that time. You know, 30 or 40 generations later, only in the broadest sense was he biologically their ancestor, though he was. But he was their father because he was seen as the head of the entire Jewish family. And even on a few occasions, the Jewish people in the Old Testament referred to God Himself as a father figure. Now, this is something that's important for us to understand when we talk about the Jewish people talking about God as Father. First of all, the Jewish people never call God, in the Scriptures at least, Father. But they did, in the Scriptures, refer to Him as being like a father. Can you understand the difference? Let's take Ed here. I'll pick on Ed this morning. I can talk about Ed as being a father, for I've met his daughter, and probably there's others besides her. But I would never, I don't think, refer to Ed as father, for I don't have that kind of relationship with him, even though father does describe the relationship he does have, in a sense, with others. And so while the Jewish people, some 10 times in the Old Testament, I checked it again last night just to make sure of that, 10 times I could find in the Old Testament, they referred to God as being like a father to the Jewish nation, a father to the king, and a father to them. And even in one place, a father to the fatherless, as being one who provided for those who were orphans or who were widows and had no one else to care for them. He was a father to them. And yet nowhere do we find in the Old Testament, or at least I couldn't find it, where the Jewish people would actually, in speaking to God in prayer, say, Father. Now, do you see that distinction? That's an important thing to understand. That to the Jewish people, they did not feel like they had the right. They did not feel like God had ever given them the right to call Him Father. Because that implied some kind of intimate relationship, some kind of familiarity that in their minds they did not have. For He was the Creator. He was the Maker. He was the Lawgiver. He was the King in the ultimate sense. He was the ruler over their lives. And while He served as a father in providing for them and guiding them and so forth, they never believed they could actually call Him Father. In the same way that Solomon could call David Father, or that Isaac could call Abraham Father. In the Hebrew language, the word for father is a very short word. And as you bring it over into the English language, transliterated, it just has two letters in it, the letter A and the letter B. It would be pronounced something like Ab. Ab, father. We talked about the Greek word, pater, but here's the Hebrew word, Ab. And so we have, for example, Abram and Abraham. You might remember back in the story in Genesis that we have this man, Abram, and his name literally meant father. And then later God changed His name to Abraham, which meant the father of many. And so there's this word Ab. By the time we get down to the New Testament period of time, the Jewish people, still speaking a form of Hebrew called Aramaic, their language had evolved, and so they had this language that was called Aramaic. It was not pure Hebrew. It was a mixture of Hebrew with Babylonian and Chaldean and Syriac, because these were all other nations that they had been sort of mixed with culturally over the centuries. And so they now had this Aramaic language that still had at its root the Hebrew language. They had taken one form of this word Ab and started applying it to those who were their religious teachers. And they referred to him as Rab. Add the little R sound at the beginning of it. And so he had rabbis. Literally, it was a term of honor to these men who were their religious leaders. And they called them abbas or rabbis. And so we see that in the New Testament. And if they especially wanted to use a term of endearment, maybe it was a very special rabbi, maybe you were very special to him, or he was very special to you, not just because of his teaching, but maybe because of a close relationship, you might even refer to him as Rabboni. We even see that in one of the women who was a follower of Jesus after his resurrection. When she sees him alive from the dead, she says, Rabboni. There was her referring to him as father, but then also that close relationship, that dearness that was there in referring to him as Rabboni. But there was another form of the word Ab that the Jewish people used, and it was used in families, and it was the word that the child was taught to say to their father, and it was Abba. You know, those of us who are fathers waited for that day when that little one in our family for the first time could say something that we could somehow construe to sound like da or dada, from which we get our more general words dad and daddy in our English language. But for the Jewish people, they weren't listening for dada. They were listening for Abba. Abba, because it was the words that a small child would say in referring to their father. And it implied not only fatherhood, but it also implied that intimate, close, childlike relationship with that person. Okay, so we've laid all this foundation. This is the world in which the people of the Old Testament live, the Jewish people live. This is also, to some extent at least, the world in which in the New Testament we find Jesus and the apostles and the early Christians living. So they had floating around in their languages, the Greek language and the Hebrew language, these two words, Ab or Ab and Pater. But they also had in their Hebrew these other forms of the Ab or Ab, as in Abba, which the small child would use to talk to its father. Very equivalent in some ways to our word daddy. But then they had that more formal word Ab that showed that respect and yet love and dependence, which would just be translated by the word father. In Easton's dictionary, which truthfully is one of the older Bible dictionaries around today, but often he says very succinctly what some of the other ones can't ever get around to saying, Easton's dictionary says of the word Abba, it is a term expressing warm affection and filial confidence. It has no perfect equivalent in our language today. He goes on to point out, and so do other Bible dictionaries, that slaves were not allowed, even in the household that they were a part of, to ever refer to their masters as Abba, only Ab. Only the true children could ever use the word Abba. We even have forms of Abba still in our language today. We talk, and again, they have religious connotations. You hear about the abbot or the abbey. And of course, both of those have traveled through a great history of their own, but they all go back to that old Jewish word Abba and Ab. Because of the intimation of what Abba meant, the Jewish people, as we've already pointed out, never used that word even to describe God that way. They would only use that word Ab. They would never call God Ab, but they would say He is like an Ab. But they would never say He was like an Abba, because they felt like that implied a kind of closeness and intimacy that you could never have with God. And then we have Jesus. Jesus, as we have the story in the Gospels, conceived of a virgin by the Holy Spirit, born into the world at age 12, according to the story in Luke, as he goes with his family up to Jerusalem to worship at one of the great feasts. They lose him. They can't find him. And that's a whole story in its own. Any of us who have had children, then you lose track of them and you can't find them. You're desperately searching everywhere trying to find out where they are, because that's what a father does, as well as a mother. But when they finally find him, where do they find him at? They find him at the temple. And he's having talks and discussions with these grown men. Now, he's only 12 years old. And so we don't need to read more into this situation than is there. But already he has this keen sense of who God is and what God's will is. And it says that they, even these grown men, were amazed at his insight. And yet when his parents find him, Joseph and Mary, and they, as any parent would do, they said, "Why have you done this to us? Where have you been? Why didn't you tell us where you were going?" What was his response? He said, basically, "Don't you know I had to be about my father's business?" Now, he wasn't taking care of Joseph's business. This is the man that had served as his father from his birth, even though he wasn't the biological father. Whose business was he about? God. And he's already referring to God not just as a father figure, but he's referring to God as my father. This would be very, very unusual among the Jewish people. And yet, from that point forward, we find Jesus continually referring to God in heaven as my Father. But he goes beyond that. He wants people to understand not only was God his Father, but that God is seeking a relationship with all people such that all people could call him Father by that title. That really stands out, for example, in the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount, in many ways, is seen as not just the greatest teachings of Jesus, but just the very kernel or the summation of what he was all about. And yet, as I tried to count, as I read through the Sermon on the Mount, as near as I could tell, 15 times in three chapters, Jesus refers to God as Father. Not just a father, not just as being like a father, but as being the Father. And you recognize some of these passages. Jesus, in chapter 5, talks about us being the salt of the earth and the light of the world, and that we need to let our light shine so that other people can see it. And he says in 5:16, "In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." Or again, a little further down, as he's talking about loving your enemies, "You have heard that it was said," 5:43, "Love your enemy and love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven." Now already, just in these two verses, 5:16 and 5:45, we've heard Jesus use the term Father to talk about God in a way that it is never used even one time in the Old Testament. Why is that? Because Jesus came to give people a different view of God than they had ever had before. He wants them to know God not just as creator and ruler and king and judge and provider, but he wanted them to understand that God was in a very real sense truly their Father. And so at the beginning of the Gospel of John, John says, on my passage here, in John chapter 1 and in verse 14, "The Word became flesh," talking about Jesus being referred to as the Word. "The Word became flesh and lived for a while among us. We have seen His glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." And then a little further down, it says in verse 18, "No one has ever seen God, but God the only Son who is at the Father's side has made Him known." A big part of Jesus' task, His role in teaching, was to make God as Father known to us. Near the end of his ministry, when he's gathered together with his apostles in John chapter 14, he's having to tell them that he's about to go away. He's going back to heaven. He's going back to his Father's side. But he's leaving them behind with a job to do. And along with that job, which was to go into all the world and preach the good news about him to every creature, they also were to be waiting for His return. And as He's talking to them about this, He says in chapter 14, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in Me. In My Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I'm going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with Me where I am, so that you also may be with Me. You know the way to the place where I'm going." It's at that point that one of His disciples said, Thomas, "Lord, we don't know where You're going. So how can we know the way?" Somehow Thomas had missed the teaching that Jesus had already been doing about Him going back to heaven. And so Thomas says, "Jesus, we don't know where You're going. So how can we know how to get there?" And Jesus answered that famous expression of His, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through Me. If you really knew Me, you would know My Father as well. From now on, you do know Him and have seen Him." And this puzzles them even more. His disciples say, what are you saying? We've never seen God before. How can you say that we've seen Him? That's why Philip says, "Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." And Jesus answered, "Don't you know Me, Philip? Even after I have been among you such a long time, anyone who has seen Me has seen the Father." Now, Jesus isn't saying that He was the Father in heaven. He's saying He's just like His Father. Now, of course, I know this doesn't work for everybody. But for whatever reason in our family, I can still remember in the early 70s, while I was preaching for a church in Huntsville, Texas, that my father came to visit us on a Sunday. And, of course, came to church with us. And when we came in that morning, here I am. I was about 3 inches, maybe 4 inches taller than my dad. He was a fairly short man. We come walking in together. And what does everyone know right away? Father, Son. I looked enough like my father, and he looked enough like me that people right away made the connection. Here a few years ago, we had the chance to go back up to Chicago to visit our older son up there, and we took our younger son, the one that lives in Lubbock, with us and his family. And so we went to church together, and so here's a father and two sons, and we went out to eat together and various other things like that. We're at the, you know, did different things together. And everywhere we went, where my son who lives in Chicago was seeing people who knew him and knew him well, and then they see his brother and they see his father, and what do they say? "Hey, I can see that. I can tell that's your father, and I can tell that's your brother." Even though I'd have to tell you that sometimes even we have trouble seeing how we're alike, others could see it. That's what Jesus is saying here. When you've seen Me, you have seen what the Father's like. I'm just like Him. Jesus made the Father known. Not only did He make the Father known, He made it known that we can call Him Father, because we can enter into a relationship with Him that makes that possible. He told Nicodemus that in order to become a part of the kingdom of heaven, that a person needed to be born again. And that's kind of a mixing of two different pictures, isn't it? Because we know a kingdom is a place where there's a king and he rules. It's like a country, a nation. And yet Jesus said to be a part of this nation, this kingdom, you have to do what? Something has to happen to you that normally puts you into what? A family. You have to be born. Because God's household and God's kingdom are the same thing. And so Jesus could mix those two images. He told parables, you know, these stories that He was famous for. Three of them I could think of right away that all not only picture God as Father, but give us great insight into what this Father is like. He told the story of two sons, that the father comes to one and says, "Son, go work in the fields, in the vineyard." And that son said, "Yes, Father, I'll go." But then after the father was gone, the son didn't do it. Then the father finds a second son and says, "Son, I want you also to go work in the vineyard, in the fields." And that son says, "No," but later repented of his rebellion and did go. And Jesus asked the question, which of these two did the will of his Father? Not the one who said he would but didn't. Rather, it was one who said no but then later repented and actually went and did it. Then he told the story of a king who is a father who throws a wedding banquet for his son. And he invited many to come to that banquet. And many began to make excuse and say they had other things to do. They had bought a piece of property and needed to go look at it. They needed to make a trip to a far country. And some of them just said, I'm sorry, I don't have time for that. And how did the king feel? How did he react at such turning away of an invitation to his own son's wedding by these people? He punished them. They were his servants. I mean, they were his subjects in his kingdom, and so they were punished. Jesus was telling a story about how Jesus was going to treat the Jewish people who rejected the invitation to attend God's son's wedding banquet. And then maybe the one we remember the most is the story often labeled as the prodigal son, in which a father had two sons, and as he's growing older, one of the sons becomes very rebellious and finally comes to his father and says, Father, go ahead and give me my share of the inheritance. He's basically saying, Father, I can't wait for you to die. So I want my share now. And so the father sadly divides up the property and gives his son his share. And he goes off and leaves and wasted in riotous living. Meanwhile, the father is still at home with the other son. One day the younger son comes to his senses and says, look, here I am. I've sunk to the point now I'm feeding pigs for a living. And they eat better than I do. I'm going to go home. I'm going to beg my father to forgive me and ask him if he'll just make me a slave, a servant in his household, and I'll live better than I'm living now. But as he's making his way home, the father sees him coming a long way off, and he runs out of the house and down the road and meets him on the way. And he would have none of this business about just being a slave and being a servant. Instead, he puts his own robe on his son and calls for the true servants to come and fix a welcome home meal and a celebration to be had. That father in that story was God. And that runaway son who was coming home is us. And Jesus tells us we can now call God Father. He even taught us to pray, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be your name. But there's one more little thing we have to say. When Jesus was in the garden that night preparing for his own crucifixion, knowing that that was coming the next day, as he's praying to his Father, he says in Mark chapter 14 and verse 35 and 36, going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible, this hour might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will. Jesus, in deepest agony that night in the garden, is on his face, he's on his hands and knees as he prays to God in heaven. And he knows what's coming and he says, Abba. What's he calling God here? Not just Father, that's the next word. Abba. The Hebrew Aramaic word that the little boy calls his dad. Daddy, if it's possible, take this away, but your will, not mine. Here we see the real heart of Jesus, in not only calling God his Father, but even calling God by that intimate term that only little boys and little girls call their dads. But I have to admit, it's not limited just to little ones. To the day my dad died. Now, I'll talk to you about him being my father. And I'll talk to you about him being my dad. But until the day he died, I called him Daddy. Because we had that kind of relationship. And even on the day Jesus is about to die, he calls his Father that too. But it doesn't stop with that. For it tells us in the book of Romans and in chapter 8 that because of what Jesus did, and therefore because of what God extends to us, a privilege. The passage we read at the beginning of the service. It says in Romans 8 and 15, "For you did not receive a spirit that makes you a slave again to fear, but you received a spirit of sonship." You see, the Jewish people, even though they had God's law and they could talk about God as being like a father, really, fundamentally, their whole relationship to God was one of fear. If we break His law, He's going to punish us. That's how they lived. If we break His law, He's going to punish us. But Paul says that in Christ, we have received the spirit of sonship. And by Him, we cry, "Abba, Father." The Spirit Himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. God has granted us the right to speak of God as our Father in the most intimate, personal way. God now allows us to call Him Abba. And we find that again in Paul's writing to the Galatians. Now, here's this guy Paul. I don't want to be flippant about this, but just realize, here's this man Paul who's lived all of his life in the Jewish religion. He was one of the up-and-coming next generation of great rabbis among the Jews. He led the way in persecuting Christians because he believed at that time that they were actually demeaning God and they were blaspheming against God and that they were following this person named Jesus who was always calling God his Father and was teaching other people that God could be their Father too. And he actually had killed Christians because of that. And then he became a Christian. And now this old crusty Jewish rabbi, who once thought you could never say that about God, is now teaching other Christians that's exactly what you can say. And so again, in Galatians chapter 4, what I'm saying is that as long as the heir is a child, he's no different from a slave. Although he owns the whole estate, he is subject to guardians and trustees until the time set by his father. So also when we were children, we were in a sense in slavery under the basic principles of the world. But when the time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those under the law, that we might receive the full rights of sons. What he's saying here is that the Jewish people, even though they were children of God, never enjoyed the benefits of that because they never allowed themselves to. They could never see what God was really doing, and so never really accepted it. And he says, "But you now have the full rights of sons because you are sons. God sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts. The Spirit who calls out, 'Abba, Father.' So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And since you are a son, God has made you also an heir." I don't want it at all seem irreverent or flippant in saying that we have the right to refer to God as our Father in the most intimate sense of that term. He's given us that right. Certainly that does not mean we can disobey His laws, that we can disrespect who He is and treat with some kind of disdain all those things that are valuable and important to Him. Exactly the opposite is the case. He's given us the right to call Him Abba. Not just Abba. For we're His sons. We're His children. And He loves to hear that from us. Words to live by. God is our Abba, Father. What's your relationship with God? Is He just someone you fear? Someone you're afraid that someday you're going to have to stand before and give an answer for the way you've lived your life? That's true, you will. But is that the only way you know Him? That's not the only way He wants you to know Him. He wants you to know Him as one you need not fear. Because He loves you so much and you love Him so much in return that you have dedicated your life to being His child. And He has already given His Son, His one and only, to die so that that could be possible. So that you could be born again, so you could be adopted into the family. Adoption is one of those words we'll use later, another word to live by that's used in the Scripture. But we know about adoption firsthand in our family because one of our children is adopted. I'm not the biological father, but I am still the father. And you know what? That child calls me daddy too, because they have that right. That adoption gave them that right. And our adoption into the family of God gives us that right to speak to Him that way. If you need to do something about your relationship with God this morning, you can do that now. Come forward and let us do what we can to help you during this time while we stand up and sing the song.